We'd find a lot of homosexuals is telling us stories when they come in, in the testimonies, that it's not just this Israeli security was trying to recruit them as a spy. It's also the security of the Palestinian who is doing the same. The Palestinian security was trying to raise agent against the Hamas and the jihad. It put the Palestinian gaze in the middle. It's not like they made a crime in the Palestinian territories and run away here. The only crime is that they want to be alive.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Marriage equality gets supreme South African approval, U.S. law schools outmaneuver a military funding attack, and torture and terrorism lock Palestinian gays in limbo. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 4th, 2004. South African gays and lesbians could be legally marrying within a year, following a landmark ruling this week by the Supreme Court of Appeal. Marie Faurie and Cecilia Bontes, a couple for 12 years, challenged the definition of marriage in common law as between a man and a woman, given South Africa's constitutional prohibition of sexual orientation discrimination. That definition was the reason the Pretoria High Court refused to recognize their marriage 2 years ago. But this week, it was openly gay Judge Edwin Cameron who announced the higher court's majority opinion that the definition should read, "Marriage is the union of two persons to the exclusion of all others for life." Faurie and Bontes believe they can marry right away, but Lesbian and Gay Equality Project Director Yeffert Knussen says that's not true for others, yet.
Even though judgment was in favor of the appellants, it's not possible for people of the same sex to be currently married. This is due to the limitations in the current marriage formula and the regulations to the Marriage Act. We have to go ahead with legal action to fix up those somewhat more minor legal problems, and we foresee that within the next 12 months or so, same-sex couples will indeed be married. But the principle has been won.
Some people believe there are many other laws which will have to be amended as well, plus revisions to official forms, and the government, which opposed the couple in the case, is not always timely in making such revisions in response to court actions. And while South African courts have awarded a long string of important victories to gays and lesbians, legislators have lagged far behind. That's not surprising, since a recent major poll found that 78% of South Africans believe homosexual acts are always wrong, while less than 7% believe they're not wrong at all. This week's ruling drew immediate protest from the opposition African Christian Democratic Party, as well as a number of religious groups.
Legislatures in several other nations are actively considering legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. New Zealand gays and lesbians are hoping for their government's bill to create civil unions legally equivalent to marriage to be enacted this month. It had its second reading in the parliament this week and passed by a vote of 65 to 55. That may seem similar to the vote on the first reading of 66 to 50, but there are many reports that support is eroding in the face of intense lobbying. Although it may be close, the bill is generally expected to win its final vote in the coming week. Opponents are now trying two tactics, amending the bill to open civil unions to any two adults, including blood relations, and to require a referendum on the issue.
The Czech Republic's Chamber of Deputies debated a registered partnerships bill on its second reading last week. Although deputies from several parties introduced the bill together, the only party that isn't divided on the bill is opposed to it. Debate centered on allegations that partnerships would threaten and weaken heterosexual families. The final vote is about 2 weeks away, and its outcome is still unclear. Czech deputies have rejected three similar proposals in the past.
Poland's Senate gave 62% preliminary approval this week to a bill to create registered partnerships, although if the many senators abstaining had all joined the opposition, it would have created a tie. The vote is remarkable for heavily Roman Catholic Poland. The Senate agreed to property and inheritance rights and next-of-kin status for same-gender partners, but rejected joint tax returns, adoptions, and the use of a shared surname. The bill moves now to the lower house, where it's expected to fail.
Germany's Senate last week approved a bill to upgrade the status of existing registered partnerships there. The Senate followed the lower house in adding survivors' pension rights and co-adoption of a partner's children to the numerous benefits of registration. But German partnerships still fall short of marriage in areas including inheritance and taxation.
In Canada last week, a parliamentary committee denied a floor vote to a private member's bill to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Through provincial court rulings, most Canadian gays and lesbians can now marry, but the federal government has chosen to await the Supreme Court of Canada's response to its questions before introducing national legislation for marriage equality. The High Court's findings are expected in the coming week.
Also in Canada, the Ontario Court of Appeal, the province's highest court, last week emphatically upheld retroactive survivor payments from the Canada Pension Plan for same-gender partners. Although Canada had established equal treatment under the pension program in 2000, it had provided for it retroactive only to 1998. Gay and lesbian couples won a ruling from a trial court that extended the benefits back to 1985, the year the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms went into effect to prohibit discrimination.
But Australia's Senate this week rejected a proposal to extend pension benefits to the same-gender partners of military personnel, flouting an order from the quasi-judicial United Nations Human Rights Commission. Although the Australian Defence Force has been open to gays for years, it has never extended spousal benefits to their partners, and the Australian government has ignored the UN body's order. Openly gay Australian Democrat from West Australia, Brian Gregg, introduced an amendment to the Veterans Bill for equal treatment, but the coalition government and Labour, the largest opposition party, joined in rejecting it.
The U.S. ban on military service by open gays and lesbians took a hit in a federal appeals court this week. A number of colleges, universities, and law schools across the country had previously barred military recruiters from their campuses under policies that generally barred prospective employers that discriminated on the basis of sexual orientation. But a 1996 measure known as the Solomon Amendment authorized withholding all federal funding from schools that refused to allow military recruitment. That prospect of lost funds forced many schools to make the military an exception to their non-discrimination policies, particularly when the Department of Defense began to actively threaten schools after George W. Bush became president. But 25 law schools joined to fight the requirement, filing a federal lawsuit claiming the Solomon Amendment violated their constitutional right to free speech. A 2-to-1 majority of a panel of U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit agreed, overturning a trial court ruling and declaring that the funding threat illegally compelled schools to express a message that is incompatible with their educational objectives. Harvard Law School, while not a party to the lawsuit, reinstated its ban on military recruiters as soon as the decision was handed down.
In one of the most extensively reported stories ever about something that won't happen, the U.S. Supreme Court this week declined to hear a challenge to the Massachusetts State Supreme Judicial Court decision that opened marriage to same-gender couples there. As is usually the case in the thousands of denials it issues each year, the justices offered no explanation. The rejection was no surprise to legal groups working both for and against marriage equality. The historic Goodridge decision was made by a state court regarding a state law on a matter the U.S. Constitution leaves to the states, so it's not easy to justify federal intervention. The appeal by the Florida-based Liberty Council on behalf of Robert Largesse of Massachusetts Catholic Action League and 11 state legislators claims that their state court's action violates the constitutional guarantee of a republican form of government, that the Massachusetts judiciary usurped the authority of the state legislature. It's an unusual approach the nation's highest court has considered in just one case in 90 years. Massachusetts State Attorney General Thomas O'Reilly counters the claim, noting that the state citizens retain control of the policy. In fact, this year, the state legislature took the first step in a long process to amend the Massachusetts Constitution to exclude gays and lesbians from marriage while allowing them its benefits through civil unions.
Reporters raised the issue in a White House press briefing, where President George W. Bush's spokesperson Scott McClellan said, The president remains firmly committed to moving forward on a constitutional amendment that would allow the voice of the people to be heard and involve states in this process. And that's different from allowing the activist judges to redefine this without the people's voice being heard. The press secretary referred repeatedly to the sanctity of marriage and the sacred institution, and to the electoral success of 11 state constitutional amendments to restrict marriage to heterosexual couples, as he was pressed on the point that the proposed federal marriage amendment appears to deny states the option to open marriage to gays and lesbians.
And finally, reports continue to come in of lesbigays and liberals planning to leave the U.S. in the wake of President Bush's election to his second term. But while most of them are hoping to emigrate to Canada, a group in Vermont is working to bring Canada home. As a border state, there's always been a lot of traffic between Vermont and Quebec. The group admires Canada's foreign policy, universal health care, and lower crime rate. And of course, gay and lesbian couples can now legally marry in most of Canada, while Vermont was the first U.S. state to create civil unions carrying all the state-level benefits and responsibilities of marriage. So the goal of the group Vermont Canada, their website is vermontcanada.org, is to have Vermont secede from the U.S. and become Canada's 11th province.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 4th, 2004, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Throughout the Muslim world, homosexuality is a taboo, punishable in several countries by death. In the Palestinian-occupied territories, men and women who have consensual adult sex with members of the same gender face imprisonment and torture. They're almost always rejected by their families and shunned by the rest of society. Several hundred Palestinian gays and lesbians have fled to Israel, but because they're Palestinian, they're illegal and they can't get asylum there. No other country wants to accept them either. In this special feature, originally heard on the Radio Netherlands program Wide Angle, Eric Beauchemin reports on these Palestinians in limbo.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
We are living under an Islamic rules, and according to the Quran, it is something which is prohibited, which is forbidden. And this is why the Arab laws mention that gays must have to be punished.
Bassem Aid is the director of the Palestinian Human Rights Monitoring Group.
According to the Palestinian Basic Law, these people are supposed to face trial and to be sentenced. We know about some cases of gays people who were arrested in the past, who were tortured by the PA, and also they were sentenced.
One of the torture victims of the PA, or the Palestinian Authority, is Rami. He fled to Tel Aviv after being tortured when he was 16.
I was arrested by the Palestinian Authority. They suspected my boyfriend was gay, and they thought I was too. They held me for 3 weeks and tried to force me to admit that I am gay. The police held me in a cell about 1 meter by 1 meter and only 2 meters high. I could sit, but I couldn't really rest. I didn't have a bed, only a blanket. Sometimes I had to wait for hours until they would take me to the toilet. Several times they threw me into the sewer and held me there for hours to make me confess. I can show you all my scars I have here on my head, my chest and my legs. They beat me, they kicked me. They tortured me by hanging me up for several hours by my hands or feet. They put my hands on a hot toaster to burn them. I couldn't do anything because my hands and legs were tied.
No one knows how many gays and lesbians have been tortured by the Palestinian Authority. Most victims are too ashamed and afraid to come forward. Gays and lesbians have also been tried by Palestinian courts. Bassem Aid recalls the case of a 16-year-old boy who was convicted to 1.5 years imprisonment in the Gaza Strip. This teenager will not only have a criminal record, he and his family will be tainted forever.
The whole family will be in troubles, not only the gay himself. Unfortunately, the society even that he was sentenced, even he was punished, then it will come to the turn of the society to punish his family. And this is how is such kind of families becomes isolated families from the society, even that all of them are completely innocent people.
But can that boy actually live in Gaza, or does he have to flee? Would something happen to him after he served his sentence?
I think that it's much better for him to leave the area where he is living, because after his release, he will not only become under the pressure of the society, but even the pressure of his family. These people, they have, the fear of their life, and the best way for these people, if they really would like to continue living, they must have to find another place to live in.
Would it be possible for him, for example, to go to the West Bank, or would he face the same problems there?
No, he will face the same problem. Under the Palestinian Authority rule, these people couldn't function and these people couldn't have, their own life.
Gays don't only have to contend with stigma. Most Palestinians suspect them of collaborating with the Israeli occupation forces. But according to Shaul Ganon of Aguda, Israel's main gay lobbying group, they're also being recruited by the intelligence services of the Palestinian Authority and armed groups such as Hamas and the Islamic Jihad.
We'd find a lot of homosexuals is telling us stories when they come in the testimonies that it's not just this Israeli security was trying to recruit them as a spy. It's also the security of the Palestinian who is doing the same. The Palestinian security was trying to raise agent against the Hamas and the Jihad. It put the Palestinian gays in the middle.
After 3 weeks of torture, I was ready to admit that I was gay. But one of the investigators took pity on me. He knew that my uncle had been coming to the police station. So he said that if my uncle raised bail, he would release me. 2 hours after I got home, people from Hamas, the Islamic Resistance Movement, came to my house. They were wearing masks and said they needed to start an investigation. My mother and my uncle told them that I wasn't home. After that, my older brother said he'd give me money so I could go to Israel. He told me that if the Palestinian Authority picked me up again, I would probably get out alive. But if Hamas took me, I would be dead. My younger brother is a Hamas activist, and he told my family that he wants to deal with me. So my big brother gave me money and told me to leave.
Rami was lucky. Most gays who flee to Israel arrive with little more than the shirts on their back, says Shaul Ganon.
The majority of the homosexuals who are coming to Israel, they are teenagers, mostly from 14 to 22, poor, they don't have money. Most of them have just an identity card. They barely speak a little Hebrew. They don't speak English. They don't speak French. They don't have a passport. And again, they are stuck between all sides. It's not like they made a crime in the Palestinian territories and run away here. The only crime is that they want to be alive.
I had burns on my hands and a lot of other wounds. I stayed at an Israeli friend's house for 5 months while I recovered. Then I started looking for work. I couldn't speak Hebrew, so I couldn't get a good job. I worked in restaurants, cooking and washing dishes, and in the construction industry. Anything just to survive. One of my older brothers has been trying to find me. He says that no matter what, he's going to kill me. I have to keep on changing my phone number. Some of my relatives and friends have warned me that they've seen someone looking for me. A couple of days ago, I saw one of my older brothers hanging around here in Tel Aviv. He was asking people where I'm staying, where I'm now.
According to Aguda, about 300 Palestinian men have fled to Israel. The number of lesbians is much smaller. It's far more difficult for women to travel on their own, says Shaul Ganon, and they face considerable pressure from society.
Under the Arab culture, the woman doesn't entitled to a will of her own. She is the property of the man. If for a man it's okay not to get married,
by the age of 30 or 40, to a woman, it's almost impossible, because at the age of 20, 22, people start wondering, what is wrong with you? Why aren't you married? So to consider that a woman would like a woman and to live with another woman, it's unbearable. I have a good friend, she's not even a lesbian, but she is 42. She lives in Tel Aviv. She's hiding all the time. She's a straight, but she didn't want to get married. By the age of 23, she had to leave the village and run away for her life because people say she's a whore. We've been facing 8 times lesbian from the West Bank coming to us. In one time, it was 2 lesbian who were caught in action, and they ran away with their underwear. And the whole village and the family was running after them. 400 people was running after them with swords and knives and wanted to kill them.
Gay and lesbian Palestinians who managed to flee live in Israel's main cities, such as Tel Aviv and Haifa. The large numbers of Arab Israelis there mean they're less likely to stand out. Nevertheless, they live in constant fear of the Israeli authorities.
One of the problems we're facing is that the Israeli government wants to deport them back. First of all, it's against all what I know about international laws. You cannot deport someone to a place that he would surely die or would be tortured. The Israeli Supreme Court has already decided 3 times about it, that a man could not be deported. But the problem is not in the court, because in the court we do succeed to have them stay in Israel, temporarily staying in Israel. The problem is in the street. Every policeman can arrest someone as an illegal alien and deport him without trial and without arresting him even.
Aguda has met with the Israeli Interior Ministry and the security services to try to find some solution for the young men and women who've already fled to Israel. International organizations are also trying to negotiate at least a temporary respite for these Palestinians, says Daniel Weishut of Amnesty International.
Amnesty International intervened and wrote letters on behalf of specific people to authorities in order to help them stay in Israel.
Have you succeeded in doing that?
In one case, someone received a temporary residence in Israel, and he's still here in Jerusalem.
But the problem is, I mean, it's temporary. It's not a permanent residence permit.
That's true. It's very difficult for a Palestinian now to get a permanent residence in Israel, whether you're gay or not.
These young people find themselves in legal limbo because of the legislation in the occupied territories and Israel's security measures. The international community, says Shaul Gannon, has also been very reluctant to help them out of this legal black hole.
The majority of the European countries are telling us, well, does he have $20,000 that he can arrange himself? We said, no, the man would run from his house with his underwear and maybe without even shoes sometimes. So how can he have $20,000? He's a teenager. Nobody is protecting him. They ask us if he has a passport. He cannot have a passport because he has to go back to his family or to his village or to his town, and then he would be murdered. So he doesn't have a passport either. So usually, when we are applying to the embassies, they are telling us, you have to go to the agency of refugees in the UN. And when we apply to them, they say, well, you know, under the law and refugees convention, Israel is the occupied West Bank, so you should go to Israel because she is responsible by this convention. Israel is saying that in this same convention, it is saying that if you are in a conflict or dispute with another country, you don't have to give them asylum or refugee status. And again, we find them falling between all chairs.
Nonetheless, over the past 5 years, a dozen Palestinian gays and lesbians have been accepted by the European Union on humanitarian grounds. Many more still live in fear in the occupied territories or illegally in Israel. Bassem Eid realizes that the human rights of these Palestinians are being violated. But these abuses, he says, pale in comparison to what's happening to the majority of Palestinians living in the occupied territories.
I think that it is not the time right now to raise such kind of issue. Palestinians are suffering from so many reasons right now. And probably the homosexual and the lesbians is the smallest topic right now, which nobody want to add it, you know, to the Palestinian suffering here. If the situation will calm down a little bit, I believe that this issue must have to be raised publicly, and more awareness should have to be spreading among the Palestinian society.
According to Daniel Weishut of Amnesty International, the taboos are enormous.
In the Arab world, homosexuality or any sexuality outside of the marriage is a problem. It's not supposed to happen. So that means changing the society's attitude to sexuality in general. That may happen, but it will take many years. That's the same whether it's in Palestine or in Saudi Arabia or in other countries in the Arab world. And we should take into account that there are still many countries in the Arab world where there's a death penalty on homosexuality.
Since Rami arrived in Israel 5 years ago, he's been deported 15 times. Each time, he's managed to make his way back to Israel. But it's becoming increasingly difficult because of the security wall which Israel is building around the occupied territories.
I'm afraid, really afraid. One of the last times I was deported, the Israelis left me on a deserted road. I saw a lot of people from my village, and they started asking me what I was doing there. I don't speak very good Arabic anymore, so they started saying that I was a collaborator. I was afraid they would kill me. I fear my brother and Hamas more than the Israeli police, because if the Israelis catch me, they won't kill me. They will just arrest me. But Hamas will surely kill me.
Do you feel like you're being punished because you're gay?
Yes, I just want to live a normal life. When I put my head down on the pillow, I don't want to have to be afraid that the police will enter my house and arrest me. I don't want to fear that I will be arrested on the street. I just want a normal life.
That report on the plight of Palestinian gays and lesbians was produced and reported by Eric Boschman.
From the courthouses in Massachusetts to the San Francisco City Hall, voices of our communities rang with joy and triumph in 2004. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. GOBT musicians join that chorus, and we'll feature our favorites on the Audiophile 2004 Year in Review, coming the last week of December here on This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Rex Wagner, and Eric Boschman contributed program material, with special thanks also to Radio Netherlands. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is primarily supported by tax-deductible charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Our listeners help keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs as a bonus. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2BBB Bellingen, New South Wales, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.